As ever, we always welcome calls from up over the mountain there. It's kind of cold. 8 degrees tonight, Trekkie guys. Put your warm coats on. Holy crow.
My gosh, it's been chilly lately. Yeah. Although, I have this new little, what do you call it, an add-on in Firefox extensions.
Yes.
And it lists the news through AccuWeather. And there have been a couple of evenings and early mornings, like 1, 2 o'clock a.m. time frame in the past few days, where it said it's, 51 degrees in Nevada City under, you know, partly cloudy, but sunny, you know, sunny skies. So somehow I think they're getting
sunny
it.
Sunny skies, yeah. Mm. Depends what time zone it's coming from. Yeah.
Right, but 51 degrees at 1 o'clock in the morning, I don't think it's happened lately.
Well, didn't you know the Irish were going to send a probe to land on the sun? And the Irishman's friend said, well, don't you know if you land on the sun, it's going to melt? Oh, he says, that's all right, we're going to go at night.
Okay. And you know what, I got to tell you, I got to tease my brother in case he's listening right now. He just happened to IM me via Hotmail's MSN Messenger. And he goes, oh, you're on the air at KNCO? And I go,
not
no.
quite.
KVMR. Because he listens to Swap Shop over there as well as the flea market here at KVMR.
But it's easy to get confused. For example, there are so many studios here in the station that we have to remember we are actually broadcasting from Studio 49. Of all the other studios that are present, just in case we get confused. Actually, on that subject about being confused about radio stations, my friend Mikhail Graham may be calling in later. The guy has now got himself an internet radio station streaming all sorts of fun stuff. He's got his eclectic music list, the other side episodes from the Tuesday night shows. You can find him at mikhailinfo.com, and I believe he's got a link there. If that doesn't work, try mikhailinfo.com. Colon 8000, and his name is spelled MIKAILINFO.com. We will put that on our website.
Okay.
In the meantime, we found a moniker for the show. I don't know if I mentioned this to Joseph, and I really enjoyed it. And that is, if intelligence creates problems, they can't probably be solved with ignorance. So the intelligence of technology creating problems in this world is certainly not going to require ignorance to fix them. It's going to require even greater intelligence. And I believe it was Einstein that said that. Probably wrong. It's up on our website if you look at today's show.
Okay.
You can correct me on that one.
Can I leave you alone for a moment or two? If you'll turn my mic down, I'm going to go set the phones up. I forgot to do that before I came
in. You know, in this codependent relationship, I don't think that's going to work, Glenn, but we can work on it.
Well, you know, people can always call in, and they'll think that they're getting on the flea market, but they really are coming on to Zentech.
That's the wrong announcement.
Let me run next door and do that. Yeah, that's the one thing I don't think I can do from here, because I don't know how I'd be able to hear which message to choose if I use the computer. But otherwise, right. I answer all the phones and do everything via the computer.
That's good.
So, I'll be right back.
He's down. Remind me to bring it up again when you return, Glenn. He's left me all alone in the studio. I can say bad things now. A lot of things have happened, as ever, in the last couple of weeks with technology here out in the tech world, one of which is that people are now getting copies of Internet Explorer 7 sent down to them. And those of you who listened to the show about a month ago would have heard us reviewing what we knew about Internet Explorer 7. I don't give it rave reviews. Two thumbs down would be more appropriate. And it will normally arrive on your machine as one of the Windows updates, and you are usually asked about whether you want to install this thing or not. Everybody's PC with any version of Internet Explorer on it right now will be running at version 6, which has been revised over the past, who knows, 4 years, about a half a dozen or a dozen times. Well, this is supposedly a brand spanking new stinking great heap of stuff from Microsoft that is more better and has finally got tab browsing and all the rest of it. I personally don't like it. I don't know what my buddy Glenn, who's now back, thinks of Internet Explorer 7, if you've seen it.
I haven't really seen it, except the fact that they move the edit, view, file, history, bookmarks, or what they call favorites, off to the side. You have to actually go click something just to get to some of the basic things that all programs tend to put in the upper left-hand mm-hmm. corner.
So they haven't followed their own directions about location of menus and stuff.
Right.
Well, they can do that because they're God.
I guess so.
Yep,
your favorite. They have about as much money as God.
That's true, or more. Do you think they're bigger than John Lennon, though?
I don't think so.
If you want your favorites back, they are a little tiny yellow star on the far left-hand end of the toolbar, if it's actually showing the toolbar. And if you want to customize that horrible toolbar, which I personally dislike intensely, you need to right-click on a gray area of the toolbar and customize that toolbar. The only compelling reason to me to use Internet Explorer is because some sites are written that use Active Server Pages and, above all, ActiveX.
Okay.
That actually requires this stuff down on your end. A good example of that is the realtors in the county are aware of a program called Paragon. It absolutely requires some version of Internet Explorer. The jury's out about whether it's going to work properly. It will work, but whether it works properly or not, who knows? So when you're offered the magical opportunity to go put IE 7 on your machine for right now, as Nancy Reagan used to say, just say no.
Yes.
Not a rave review. I give it about 3 out of 10.
But not to stem cell research. She's...
Ah, interesting. I wonder why.
Yeah, she said just say no to everything else, but not that.
Right. Yes.
I'm going to make an effort here of actually updating the website live.
Cool.
Now, will people be able to see it, or do I have to actually say before they can see it, or
Correct.
Can they see me doing it?
No, they can't see you doing it.
Okay.
Thank goodness for that.
Okay.
We're using a content management system at zen.kvmr.org. Glenn is logged into that. And observant visitors to our website will have noticed that neither of us have a whole lot of time to do this. But the original content management system came with 100 different styles that I picked up over the internet. We're running a winter theme right now, so it's got icy icy stuff at the bottom. Okay. And the only thing that's got any warmth in it is Zen tape. You see that? Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. Now, okay, I'm not sure where I'm supposed to. It says intro text. Okay, I'm not going to touch that, but the main text is where I can actually go in and edit and do stuff live.
What's the intro text? Just today's date?
Your quotes, Isaac Asimov, the one about knowledge and
That's Asimov, not Einstein. Can you read it again? Because I know it was a very good one.
If knowledge can create problems, it is not through ignorance that we can solve them.
Much better put than I summarized.
And then you also put in here from Thoreau.
Yeah.
The universe. And then another quote from Henry David Thoreau, to be even to found a school, but so to love wisdom as to live according to its dictates, a life of simplicity, independence, magnanimity, and trust. What does magnanimity mean?
Greatness or big-heartedness.
Okay. And you know what? If you look at all the great religions, and I have to put in my little caveat, I'm not a religious person, nor do I care for religion because of their judgments. However, I think I just made a judgment. if you look
Paradox.
At this, the quote that I just read, that sort of sums up many of what hopefully most of the world religious views strive for, I would hope.
There is a final quote on there whose exact wording I can't remember. It's to do with the fact that as the area of your knowledge increases, so does the circumference of darkness.
As our circle of knowledge expands, so does the circumference of darkness surrounding it.
I'm doing quite good. It's like being at school when they ask you to summarize or praise an article. So we do, on this show, try to concentrate on keeping technology as our slave, not our master. And one reason for that is to consider that things that are supposed to make life easier should be dumped if they make it harder.
Okay.
But we feel compelled sometimes to be tied to our cell phones and so forth. So let's keep the technology a slave where it belongs.
Certainly. How about if we take a phone call?
That'll be good. And then after that, I think we can talk to Mikhail here about his streaming radio station.
Oh, wonderful.
I will get you up on there. We've got documentation about a phone patch and everything. It's so cool. Now we know what we're doing.
Exactly.
I love that.
Caller, you're live on the air. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I have a kind of an unusual video display problem on a Dell laptop.
Okay.
And, thought maybe you'd have some thoughts on this. Certain videos, for instance, if I go on a news station and click on their weather report, the video will be completely saturated in color. It'd be like if you had a still image in Photoshop or something, and you push the saturation adjustment clear to one extreme. You know what I mean? So that
Yeah. Does all the other graphic display look okay? Is it just animated videos?
It has motion and everything, and you can see that it is the video. However, it would be, you can barely discern what's going on because there are no muted tones. Everything is either bright orange, bright yellow. You know, it's a patchwork of these extreme colors. You know, the same video viewed on my desktop computer looks fine. And other videos of the same type, meaning Windows Media Player type videos, will display fine from other websites.
So is this the particular website or the video that you've gotten from that website?
I have noticed it consistently on news videos from like KCRA.com, but I've also noticed it on other from other sources, websites.
What type of video? Does it indicate anywhere what the form of the video is that you're getting?
Well, if I right-click on it and select Properties, and then it says, Windows video player, Windows Media Player.
Does it say WMV, or does it use any final letters for the video type?
Yeah, let's see. This one just timed out here, but let me take a look again. It'll say... Windows Media Video V7.
I'm only guessing. I don't know that this is Windows Movie File Format. And if you can go help about Windows Media Player and see what version it is, version 10 is widespread and version 11 has just come out. Anything older than that should probably not be used.
And I'm wondering also if maybe you change, when you do download this file, rather than just letting it open as it would normally, right-click on it and say open with something different, i.e. Nero or a Power DVD, some other...
There's not many things play Windows Movie File Format, WMV, only the Windows Media Player. Do you see what version of the Windows Media Player you've got there?
Version 9.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would update that.
Okay.
11 has just come out. I haven't particularly tried it, but it should be newer than 9. That's your first step.
Okay.
Is this XP or is this something older?
It's XP. It's fairly new. It's about 6 months old laptop. It's a Dell Latitude D610, and it's about 6 months old or something like that.
Well, here's what to try in that case, and that's go into Internet Explorer and go Tools Windows Update. Let it go through its machinations and click on Custom, and under Optional Installs, you should see the newer Windows Media Player, which is probably 11 now.
Okay.
My guess is that's the first line of attack, that's what's wrong. The second line of attack is that the video driver is operated under what they call DirectX, which is normally what media players drive.
Okay.
So if the video driver for this Dell, did you say, is out of date, that will definitely mess things up.
And there are some things that that come up with Internet Explorer that I've encountered where it says there's a pop-up and you need to look at this and you need to download something. And is it safe pretty much, Paul, whenever it says there's a DirectX module that you need to install to make this work, that it's okay to get that?
I would go out to Microsoft and download the DirectX updates, and that is possibly under an optional update. So when your machine is set to auto-update, it doesn't get these second stage optional things. So I'd pick DirectX and Windows Media Player 10 or 11 and get those and take it from there. And if you've done it before the end of the show, let us know. If it breaks, don't call back.
What's your question?
If it makes any difference, I'm using Firefox for the browser, and
That launches other stuff as plugins or external, so it may not be related to that.
Okay.
What's your first name, please?
Bill.
Okay, Bill, I'm just updating our website now with this information, and if you could call us back letting us know what happens, we'd really appreciate it.
Okay, will do. Thanks for the help.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Bye.
And let's take a look at our next caller. Okay, what did I do there?
We've actually got Mikhail in the studio, so after this next call, we're going to talk a little bit about the compression of MP3 files and his streaming radio station, which he's having all kind of fun with, I think.
Okay.
That'll be good.
And we've got lots of phone calls, so let's take this call, and actually let's take the next two calls, because we've got the third person that's been holding about 5 minutes, and then we'll go to Mikhail if that's okay. Caller, you're live on the air. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi there. This is James. Hi, Paul.
Hi, James. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good. I'm over here at Blue Dolphin, and I'm wondering if routers can be put into series. We have a 5-port existing, and I have a second unit. I'm wondering, is it possible just to go from one router into another and thereby increase the number of ports that you have?
For the situation you're doing there, you would not do that. What you're talking about is the fact that the router you have has probably got 4 or 5 ports on it, right?
Correct.
What you should attach to that thing is a switch, not a router.
Ah.
Because they're more cheaper, and they don't do any form of routing. They just propagate or increase. What we're talking about for listeners that may be baffled is, you know those power strips you can get where you plug them into the wall and they let out 6 more outlets?
That's what a switch will
do. That's what a switch will do. It's not the ideal situation, but a router is definitely not the right situation here.
Because then you have two competing pieces of equipment trying to do the same thing
and assigning
IP addresses and stuff. So you want, for to expand, you want to go with that switch.
I see. The fact that I happen just coincidentally to have a new router here is... It's useless. It's the wrong piece of equipment.
Well, no, Paul, can a router be... Can you go into the internals?
You can turn off.
Turn off.
Yes, you can turn off the routing functions, but you've got to be very careful to turn off all the clever stuff it does. For example, a router contains a DHCP server. If you connect them in serial, it means that all your traffic from the Internet is being rerouted twice, which is not good.
Mm.
if you connect them in parallel so that all the ports are connected together and you don't turn off the second router's so-called DHCP server, you suddenly end up with two DHCP servers on the network, and some machines will get one and some will get the other, and you will lose your mind. Yeah, lose your mind, yeah. Ideally, just go out and get a switch. They're cheap.
Okay.
They are $15
or $15 to $30, depending on how many extra ports you want. But I've seen an 8-port switch for under $30.
Oh, great.
The bottom line is just having a router and turning off those functions will cause trouble, because later on, if for any reason it resets and starts operating as it did at manufacturer's defaults, the whole network will go, it'll go haywire. Yeah.
Got it.
That's the trick for that one.
Wonderful. And one other quick question that I think will apply to most of the listeners is I have a laptop that I pretty consistently simply close all my programs and then close the cover, put it into sleep mode or standby.
Right.
And that's my typical way of doing it, rather than shutting the whole computer down.
Yeah.
Going to start. Is that an advisable thing to do, or a good thing to do? Or
you mean closing the lid and suspending it rather than shutting it down?
Correct.
I don't trust it for two reasons. One is the backlight's supposed to go off when you shut the lid on the thing, and there's a tiny little switchy on the deck.
Correct.
Sometimes that switch will fail to operate, or it gets busted. Mm-hmm. And in that case, the backlight will be on while the lid's shut, and you'll end up with a foot warmer inside your laptop bag. Mm. And Mikhail's got something
now
to say about this.
You're on a PC, a laptop?
Yes, I am, Mikhail.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing Paul's talking about. On the Mac laptops, I don't have any fear of it at all for the most part. It seems to work quite well. But on some of the PCs, the way Windows goes into its hibernation mode sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. And you definitely can kind of
mess with it. Oh, worse still, it will work fine and never come back.
Well, there's that. That's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah. So I think, you know, it does work a lot of times on the PC, but it's not something I'd trust either. I definitely tend to, when I'm in that mode on a PC, I definitely tend to manually, you know, shut it down.
Go ahead and shut it all the way down. Right there.
Furthermore, James, what will happen is, as you know, Windows leaks memory.
Yeah. Mm.
So if you repeatedly close the lid on it and suspend Windows, it's never recouped lost memory. So it'll progressively leak over the days.
Yeah, I tend to with the Mac laptop. I mean, I run it for days at a time just doing that, but then I'll notice the memories. You know, sooner or later, some apps kind of leak somewhere. So it's good to restart at least every couple of days if you're going to do that, anyhow.
I see.
There is a tool out on Microsoft called Uptime.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you for sure where to get it, and it leaves a little thing on the desktop that says, you know, Uptime, and that will suspend and resume the uptime. So if you're up for 10 hours and suspend it and start again, it starts incrementing from 10 hours.
Oh,
very good clue, and you can usually tell somewhere about 24 hours out, things start to go haywire.
Ah. Excellent. Well,
all right, James.
Appreciate that help, and thank you, gentlemen, for all the good information.
You're welcome. Thank you, James.
Happy holidays.
Well, same to you. Thank you. Let's take our next caller real quick, and then we'll get to Mikhail. Thanks for being here, Mikhail. We appreciate it. Caller, you're next on the air. Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I've got two laptops. One, an older one that I just use for the internet, because I hate those, you know, McV and all that other stuff. And it never comes onto the newer computer. The newer laptop is a Toshiba. Both of them have the exact same problem. Whenever I'm typing, and I'm a writer, so I type a lot, once in a while, the cursor will jump up about 10 lines and start typing on that line.
I can almost tell you exactly what's happening, because mine does the same thing, and I have my Veritech laptop, and I quizzed Paul about it. I said, why is my computer doing this? And are you resting the palms of your hands on the edge of your laptop?
Yeah.
You're tweaking the board inside there.
The motherboard?
Yeah, or you're tweaking something inside there, and it's causing your mouse to go various places where you don't want it to be.
The other thing is, these laptops, I'm guessing, both have touchpads on them, right?
That'll definitely do it.
Yeah, that'll do it for you. And you can adjust the sensitivity of that to make it respond less. Personally, I never actually use that wretched touchpad because I hate it. I plug in a regular mouse.
So if we turn off the touchpad, and it's possible that this will go away, because it really does bug me.
Yeah, so when you move your fingers, for example, I'm a one-finger typist, and my thumbs drape on the keyboard and below it. And when I go up the keyboard, my thumb goes up the scroll pad.
Sometimes even if your finger doesn't touch it, just the sense sensitivity between the skin getting near it will kind of move it around. I notice if I have one on the Apple, it's a really big trackpad, so I'll have my hand resting there, and sometimes I can't get the mouse to go anywhere, and it's like, oh, criminy. It's looking at my other hand sitting there wanting to do something else.
The other thing Glenn pointed out, and I've noticed, is some designs of laptop, the tiny little 2.5 2.5-inch hard drive is directly underneath the front of the keys.
Yeah.
And you put any more than the tiny amount of weight on there, and it does the thing you're not supposed to do that it says in the hard drive, which is don't press on here.
Sometimes with a CD, they're also there, and that really is interesting because you get this...
If it's a chainsaw noise, you shouldn't be doing that.
You know, here's the thing. That was what I was told about a year ago when this first started happening to the older computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really careful not to touch the touchpad. In fact, I put a cover over it so I wouldn't touch it. Still does it. So I called the Toshiba people because this computer was still under warranty by one day.
Ah, good.
Oh, man, I came under the line. They put a new motherboard in it. They said that's the problem.
That's a great story.
But it didn't solve the problem, did it?
Didn't solve the
problem. Okay.
Yeah, well, didn't touch it.
I'm pretty sure what Paul found out and what we've just described is most likely what's happened with you.
So if I put a piece of wood that's not touching the computer that I can put my hand on and rest it, then what I'm hearing you say is this problem will probably
just
go.
Put a couple of penny nails in there, it'll be
rich. Bang them in, good.
And you know what I found, what I use at home, although with my desktop, not with my laptop, but if your laptop's going to be in a stationary position for a while, take some simple washcloths. And if you sew or know someone who knows how to sew them together, except for a small area, fill them with cracked corn.
Uh-huh.
And then sew that up. And they make great rests for your hands or your arms or your forearms.
Oh, yeah, that's a good use for cracked corn.
Yeah, it really is. And then if you ever need it for a sore shoulder, throw it in the microwave, heat it up. It smells really good.
It doesn't pop.
Does. It's a nice, warm compress for sores and aches.
That's if I had a microwave.
Oh.
Okay. Well, come over to my house. I'll share mine with you. What was your first name, please? I'm going to start putting names here on the site if people don't mind.
Glenn's a different kind of guy, you know?
Caller, what's your first name?
Nick.
Nick, thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye.
Have you hit save there, Glenn?
Say it again?
Paul was asking me if I've hit save, and I'm going to. Thank you, Paul. Thanks,
and did
Nick.
The cursor jump?
No, it didn't, although it did earlier.
Yeah, right.
Thanks a lot.
We've got one
now.
More caller, don't we?
We've got actually three calls holding, but let's go with
God.
What you've got going
okay.
on.
Okay. Well, folks, you're going to have to hold for a few minutes while we babble on about MP3s. I just recently, I'm looking at this wonderful little Truly Cool, and that's a pun because it's made by Truly, this cool little gadget that Glenn picked up at Fry's recently. It's a little MP3 player that also plays videos, also is a handheld voice recorder, also is an FM radio, and it's about the size of a couple of matchbooks, really.
Yeah.
And doggone it, $40, and it's got
not anymore.
It's got an SD card, which is really nice. And I read some reviews about it, and they dissed it. But I'll tell you, looking at the thing, it's wonderful. It's like a wonderful little piece.
It really is. I've been spending...
Does bookmarks as well, which I really love.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. I've been spending the last couple of days ripping some of my CDs from... surprisingly, I used to belong to BMG or something like that when I lived in the Bay Area, and I've got like tons of CDs. So I was ripping a few of my favorite ones. And put them on here, and I've been listening to it a lot. I typically don't listen to music, so hopefully this is going to bring me back to listening to
music.
You and
me both.
And get me into the gym.
The gym, and I got, Glenn brought back another one that I picked up that isn't quite as cool, but also works well and plugs right into the Mac or the PC. You just drag your files onto it. It's got a voice recorder, FM radio, for about $3 less than his cool one.
Yeah.
But it came with a wrist, or a little shoulder strap and everything, and a cool little case. Anyhow, Paul was talking earlier, yes, the other side now has its own internet radio station, which is in the experimental tweak phase, and actually, if you go to theotherside.biz, that's where you'll find the link to it. I'll put a link on michaelgraham.com or michaelinfo, either one will get you to the same place, but there's four channels right now of programming, one that plays the entire Mr. Filter library that's online, one that plays just... various soundtracks that the other side focuses on, one that plays eclectic sort of things, and one that streams nothing but old past shows, rather, of the other side over the past, 20-some years. So they keep getting more and more at it all the time. So pretty interesting, to be doing this.
The link will be on our website. We're interested in feedback, and Mikhail made some interesting discoveries about iTunes encoding.
Yeah, we were doing a bunch of encoding, and a lot of the material I put up there had been ripped through iTunes using the standard MP3. I had never really used iTunes before, but it makes it so simple.
Mm.
But the problem being is that I started listening to some of this stuff and going, I don't like the sound of that.
Even I could notice it. Yeah, that's saying a lot.
And that was saying a lot, because when Paul said, you know, there's this sound going on, and I said, oh, you heard it too. That was enough for me. So I went on a hunt and didn't want to switch over to the PC if I didn't have to. Not, you know, the PC's got some great apps, though, but I found some really, really great utilities and a great little ripper for the Mac that does Mac MP3 Pro for the Mac, and it's called Audion. And if you just do a search on the web for Audion, you'll find it. And I went to buy it, but it's not for sale anymore. They're giving it away for free. They even give you a serial number, which scared me because I thought, well, geez, if they're giving it away for free, the MP3 Pro encoder must not be there because there's licensing issues.
That's proprietary license, yeah.
But no, nope, it is still there, so grab it while you can, and seems to run fine on both Macs, Power PCs and Intel Macs.
Yeah, we got panic.com/Audion, Audion. There
and
it is.
And it's very cool. Now, the cool thing about this little app that is free, mind you, yet again, it's free, it rips your CDs using various techniques, but MP3 Pro is what I've chosen for the other side streams. But beyond that, this thing also will create a library like iTunes does. But it goes a step further. It has batch convert, so it will allow you to throw in multiple CDs. All you do is start it, choose where you want things to go, and just start throwing CDs in, and it does it in the background. You don't even think about
it. So pop the drawer and ask you for the next one?
That's it, yeah, just kicks it out and ask for the next one.
That's what we need for the station.
And it works fabulous, sounds great, but it does a step further for you budding internet radio folks out there. It also has a Shoutcast streamer built right into it, so you can actually take your library and stream it using this little app that costs you nothing.
Only for a Mac?
Only for Mac right at the moment.
Okay.
I'm sure there's something like this on the PC, but I haven't investigated it yet. It is a great little ripper, and the difference between the quality of sound is what really surprised me. I was telling Paul, I did a lot of this stuff at 64kbps at 44.1 sample rate. Using the MP3 Pro and Audion, instead of iTunes, I'm doing it at 64.22, and it sounds better by far.
The question was whether the MP3 encoder present in iTunes was intentionally degraded.
I don't. It might have been. There's also, as Paul pointed out to me, I found a lame encoder that you can add a script to iTunes as well. We'll get you some info about that if you're interested in any of this techno.
You know what?
Atrocities.
We're using the word lame without explaining it, and the word lame in conventional
usage. Oh, that's true.
It means kind of dumb and useless. Well, it ain't.
It really isn't. It's actually quite a useful little extension.
It stands for lame ain't an MPEG encoder because it didn't used to be, but now it is.
Now it is, which is kind of silly. But that's available. But I still, even though iTunes is kind of the fancier of the two, this MP3 Pro encoding is fabulous, so I'm replacing, unfortunately, gigabytes and gigabytes of audio files now with MP3 Pro encoded files, which are working just great. So
what's interesting about that is the MP3 format passed its 10th birthday not long ago.
Mm.
It is a proprietary format. The algorithm, the idea behind the way it works, is itself patented. It's not like patenting a mechanism. The math and the science behind the production of highly compressed audio files is patented technology. And that patent was enhanced about 3 or 4 years ago with MP3 Pro technology, which uses a wonderful bit of science jargon called psychoacoustics. I absolutely love that.
It's wonderful stuff.
It's highly subjective what exactly the losses in an audio file are. In other words, an audience full of people, 100 people, will tend to agree that this particular compression makes the thing sound metallic. So they add in some little data which helps the decoding process figure out that it should chop out certain frequencies. And that's been the subject of psychoacoustic modeling for a long time, which is the business by which you poll a large audience.
Yep.
And adjust the results. It's as simple as that. It's not actually science, it's magic.
They recommended, actually, the Fraunhofer Institute recommended this Suzanne Vega track, Tim's Diner, to do your tests with. I couldn't find the track because I didn't have it. So I actually ended up using a track by Les Baxter that some of you fans of The Other Side will remember called Quiet Village, which has a weirdo part that's like very, very intense, which is what the first thing I heard when I heard this encoding of streaming over the other side's radio station was like, oh my God, what is that horrible flanging sound? Well, that's what I did tests with, and it was also, you know, quite good to use, because when that flange goes away, it sounds much better.
It's not being anal to pick the kind of music which is subject to the worst destruction, because then everything else starts to sound better. So that was your choice.
Yeah, and it seems to, that was just the one I had. I would have gladly used Tom's Diner if I could find it, but we didn't have it here at the station, and Paul's got a copy of it somewhere, but didn't have it. But there's another app I want to tell you about, because we've got some phone calls out there as well we want to get to. Media Rage. It's also for the Mac. And this thing, it's $29.95. I ended up buying it last night. I sent Paul some emails.
That's late. The tagger, right?
It does more than that. It does. It's like, I don't know what it doesn't do. I was so impressed with it because I'd encoded a bunch of files and noticed that whoever had inputted the data hadn't got quite the names quite right. There was some Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner stuff, and it came out Imoy without the Leo, Leon before it. And it was just all weird, and I thought, oh, my God, I've got to go back and replace 23 files. Well, it was a simple thing with this program. I just went in. I ended up going out and getting the right data from the right database. And then I took the files that were there, and I said, now impose all this data upon that. It replaced all the ID3 tags in about a half a second.
Wow.
It was just done.
The name again, MP3?
Media Rage.
Media Rage.
And you know what
that's
available
from? Chaotic Software.
Spelling?
Chaotic, C-H-A-T-O. If you just do a search for Media Rage, I think it'll come right up.
Chaotic Software.
Yeah, you have to go. The company's name is Chaotic Software, and you look for a search in there. They've got several products.
And they've got a bunch of different products if you go to their products page. But Media Rage was just, I don't buy things a lot unless they work. You know, I'll try them out and then use them for a bit, and then if they don't work, forget it. But this was one that literally within the first half hour of having it, I was stunned at the plethora of stuff that it does, and it's just fabulous.
This came out of the fact that I tend to live my life in the twilight zone on a PC by force of necessity. Yeah. That's what I work with. And there's a program free out there that will do your tagging for you, similar to this.
So yes, ID3 was looking tag.
For, yeah, Mikhail was looking for something for the Mac. In the PC world, I use MP3 tag, I think is mp3tag.de.
.de, the German company. I went there as well, looked at that, which I did grab it for my when I'm in PC mode, which is useful. And then I went to versiontracker.com and found, just typed in MP3 tag tags, and came up with a whole page of different things for the Mac. I tried them all, and most of them were kind of wanky, although there was one app that was very cool as well called Max. And I don't remember the website for it, but if you go to Version Tracker and type that in, it'll come up. It's a little audio editor converter that will take pretty much any file format to any other file format. So it's a great way if you need to create. It'll even do AAC.
That's a freebie, right?
Yeah, and that's a freebie.
That one, if your listeners out there from the Unix or Linux world, you'll recognize an app called Sox, S-O-X,
yeah.
Which is an, I was going to say ugly, but why not? It's ugly. It's a command line utility. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that Max is a front
end
for this.
It's a full front end for it, yeah.
Right, and that program sucks. There isn't anything it wouldn't convert. They say about Unix, by the way, as it's driven from a command line, it's not that it isn't user-friendly. It just cares who its friends are.
That's true. I'm learning to become very good friends with it. We're getting to know one another pretty well. There's a few points where we argue still. But I'm definitely learning that doing this internet radio station, which if anybody is interested, again, that's just go to theotherside.biz at the bottom of the screen on the homepage of The Other Side. You'll see a link that says click here to try Mr. Filter's experimental music radio station. So you just click there and you've got four channels to choose from, and
commercial free.
There are no commercials. About the only thing you'll hear is me occasionally saying you're listening to this or that, and this is The Other Side, little ads for The Other Side on Tuesday nights here from 8 to 10 p.m., which tomorrow night I'll be doing a Christmas special.
Okay. Right.
We got a bunch of phone calls.
Well, yeah, let's go to a phone call, but I have a question in the meantime. Is there anything wrong with WMA, or is MP3 better?
They're different. It's the most universally accepted playing file format. That's the main reason.
WMA is proprietary.
Yeah.
In that if you want to make a third-party tagging tool, what Mikhail and I have been talking about is all these third-party tools. Although the algorithm of generating MP3s is proprietary and patented and all the rest of it, the file format is not.
Right.
Meaning you can add and remove things from it, such as the tags, the ID3 tags we talked about. WMA files are completely proprietary. You have to pay Microsoft the royalty if you're going to make something that goes in there and tags it, or else use Windows Media Player and nothing else.
And that whole sort of way of thinking is just going away. I mean, it's happening slow but sure across every field of technology.
WMA
on the planet.
It's supposed to be more compact.
That's what I understood, that they would make smaller files.
Yeah, well, Apple's lossless, what is it they call it? It's not the
FLAC?
Yeah, there's one, and I know my old company, Magic, was involved in some of that. We came up with some great algorithms for compacting data, but just because it's a little more compact, it's like MPEG-4 is so much more compact, sounds great, but how many people are supporting it? And partly it's because of the restrictions of how much you have to pay to do it.
The interesting thing is, you'd think with all the space on machines now, why would the size of the files matter so much? The answer is, they're ending up in cell phones and these little units like Mikhail was talking about. They are still relatively limited on memory.
But still, what I'm broadcasting at now is 64:22, which is supposedly not supposed to sound good at all, and it sounds great. So, and I'm encoding this stuff. I'm looking to eventually I'm going to re-encode everything to 192, 44.1, and then I'll just transcode it down to the various streams. But what that means to you folks is that it'll sound great no matter what you're listening to it on. But the point being is, smaller, even though it's smaller, can be better in the sense of space. It isn't necessarily, better in the sense of open source availability. And it's like I was reading an article today about cell phones. There's a group of folks meeting now every week in the Bay Area to come up with an open source cell phone that'll basically be able to do everything we want them to do without the limitations of what Verizon, Singular, T-Mobile, et cetera, put on you with the design of these phones.
Well, Verizon got into trouble for selling the Razr phone by turning off some of the Bluetooth functions.
They basically cannibalized it. And just let you plug in a Bluetooth headset, and that was it. I literally almost quit Verizon because of it, and I haven't upgraded my phone for over 2 years now because of this whole nonsense.
The thing is, you can actually break in there and fix it, but the phone's capable of a lot more than the phone company allows it to use. The idea is they don't want you sharing ringtones. They want you to buy them.
Exactly. And that's what these people are looking at doing. It's the same way that the computer industry started, where the folks used to meet and get together and do a little brain swap, how can we do this and make it work the way we want?
Hey, the Homebrew Computer Club.
That's what it is. It's the Homebrew Cell Phone Club.
That was where Jobs and Gates
Wozniak and Gates and all those guys.
So back there were cell phones. And we're having a good time here.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
Caller, thank you so patient for being so patient. You're live on the air. I hope that wasn't a click of a hang-up.
Hi. No, that was good. Me picking up. I had you guys on speakerphone, so I didn't have to hold this to my head.
Good. Thanks.
Hey, I've got a Mac, and I'm running an extra video card, and I've got...
What Mac is it first?
It's a gray G4 Tower.
What OS?
The OS is 10.3.9.
Okay.
But I'm also running 9.2 when I want to use my old programs, which I love.
Yep.
And when I'm running the 9.2, both my monitors look fine. I'm able to drag stuff back and forth, and it's great. But when I go to the 10.3.9, one of the monitors becomes a black and white, very pixelated, weird-looking thing that's almost useless.
Sounds to me, if I'm not mistaken, that your drivers aren't updated to support the video card for OS 10.
Who made the card? Do you know?
Who made? Is it an ATI or is it
the card?
The video card.
Well, I'm gonna go in here and. I've got, there is an ATI.
It could be the one that's built in, but...
that's true, huh?
If you've got two of them, Apple usually, they either used ATI or they used the other guys.
What NVIDIA?
I also have a GeForce 2 MX.
Right, that's the NVIDIA makes them, I think.
Yeah,
I've got an ATVI and I've got a GeForce 2.
Okay. Well, the first thing I would do is go out to their prospective websites for that particular card, the external card. That's the one that's causing the problems, correct?
I'm not sure which one is.
That would be the first thing to determine which monitor is plugged into which card.
Which card, yeah.
And then go to that particular card's website and look for updated drivers for the version of OS 10 you're using, because it sounds like it's out of date to me.
Okay, so I need a driver for OS 10. So the OS 9 is working because it's got the original drivers, which I originally was using it in.
Yeah. Okay. The fact that it works there tells me that's what my guess would be, is that I don't think there's anything broken. It's just that the operating system hasn't been updated to support it.
What can happen, and this turns up in the PC world, is if you have two video cards, you don't have to run them anything close to the same rate. They can each get their own scan rate.
Right.
But sometimes if one is a funny multiple of the other, it'll
that's
screw
true
up.
Too.
So you can go into your preferences and bring up monitors and look at the refresh rate and the resolution.
Yeah,
of
have
each
you
of the
tried
monitors.
That? Yeah, try the different refresh rates, the different frequencies, because you'll be surprised. They'll show you recommended, and then you can say show all. Try all and just click through them. It can't hurt anything at all by trying that.
Now, in when you're in displays,
mm-hmm.
They give you two numbers, like a 1280 by 1024.
Yeah, horizontal and vertical.
Is that what
rate
you're talking
yeah
about?
That's exactly what we're talking about. And you should be able to identify which card is which just right there by clicking the identify button. It'll flash a 1 and a 2 on your respective monitors to kind of identify what's what.
Right.
And at that point, just try the different resolutions. If that doesn't fix it, I'd go out to find out who makes the card and go to their website, see if they have any updated support for it.
Great. Hey, thanks a lot, you guys.
You bet.
What was your first name, please?
Charlie.
Charlie, thanks for holding and thanks for calling in.
All right, talk to you later.
Yeah, check zen.kvmr.org because Glenn's actually bang up to date with his stuff. Absolutely
cool.
Trying my very best.
Real
time. I missed one of the MP3 things, but we'll
go back to
it
later.
Yeah. So let's go to our next caller. You're live on the air. Thanks for holding.
Howdy, guy.
Hi.
Bruce.
Hi, Bruce.
Hey. I got a few questions for you. One of you were talking about routers before. We've got an old Kingman 3440 online here, and then we put a firewall on the inside of it. And our network expert needed to be able to access something on the inside from the outside, you know, like work at home kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he set the router to bridge so that...
Uh-oh.
And you were saying something about, well, what if it loses its mind and then resets it to default, and of course everything blows up again.
So bridge was not the right thing, so the little teeny reset button was pushed, and then what happened?
Well, no, the reset button hasn't been pushed, and he's bridging it so it's not DHCPing, so that the firewall is doing that function.
This is a Cayman router.
Yes,
and
the older one.
Right, and the purpose was to get traffic somewhere from the outside into PC
yeah,
Anywhere
you
or whatever.
Yeah, access to like PC Anywhere or whatever.
Is this the only router?
Yes.
Usually when you try things with bridge, it's bad news. What you've got is with the existing mode, you could have fixed it by going to advanced and what they call pinholes. Did you see that?
I know about pinholes. I'm not sure if he did. I'm no longer sysop.
All right, that would be the thing to use. It's got a different name in every router you will see.
But yeah, you create a pinhole for specific IPs, and then they
that's why it's called a pinhole. The 65,000 or 64,000 addresses you could have, only the little one or two of them are let through for PC Anywhere, one or two ports.
Right.
In bridging mode, all bets are off because I've never had a need to do it.
Well, then at that point, what he was having problems with is that the something with the DHCP was not working properly.
You're connected to a DSL line, is that right?
Yes.
And there's a DSL modem on the other side of this Cayman?
No, the Cayman is a
DSL
modem.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, that's right. I would.
So far, it's working, I believe.
It
but
is.
But I'm concerned with that situation that you said when it inadvertently gets reset for some reason. Of course, we have to rebuild the whole system.
Right.
You better write everything on paper before we.
That would be good, and print screen is also good.
Yeah.
The bridge mode does not serve you because it's not intended to be used. I'll only go this far as to say that's not what it's meant for.
Right, and even though it's skirting around the Cayman's ability to DHCP,
right,
it's not really what it's meant for.
I'll pass that
information on. Before it blows up.
Yeah, look up Cayman pinhole, and you'll find the manual that's still out there.
I've got into the pinhole screens. I haven't set them up, but I do know what they do. The other question is. Nice ViewSonic monitor. Have you ever seen one where the vertical sync is whacked, where it has like 1 3/4 screens vertical?
Oh.
And is proper horizontally, but it's not proper vertically.
That can happen if you're connected to an old video card without much video memory. And it redraws the last part. If you only got 512 megabytes of memory, well, God help you for a start. But where it runs out of memory, it will start drawing the next screen 2/3 of the way down the screen. Is that what's happening?
That's what it's doing. And the very last part of the first screen is kind of fuzzy. When you move the cursor across it, you get little white lines.
It sounds like the video card itself is either whacked so that it should have more memory but doesn't. It could be a shared video card that's borrowing memory.
Well, what I have on there, at least the one I'm testing with now, is a dual video card, dual head. So it's a fairly modern car.
So you're getting funny things happening when you move the mouse and it twinkles along some of the bars?
Only when I get to the very bottom of the first rendition of the screen.
It sounds like video RAM is messed up on this thing.
On the monitor?
No, on the video card.
Was messed up originally, and then after a repair, it came back and stopped making thousands of little horizontal lines. But this vertical sync problem remains.
When you plug that ViewSonic into something else, is it okay?
No, as far as I know. I've tried it elsewhere, and I'll try it again.
So it's a compound problem. There's something funky.
It sounds like a hardware problem in the ViewSonic.
Yeah, but at 1.5, and it's a flat screen or a tube?
It's the LCD.
If it's not behaving tip-top on a machine that you know is creating a proper video signal, all bets are off. You've now got two unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
I would take it from that point of view. And the other thing is, like the other caller called up, do what you can to find out what warranty's left on it, quick.
There is none.
Oh, right, okay. Then.
And I've already talked to the only service center on the West Coast, and they're stumped.
Yeah.
So, and have you tried taking another monitor and putting it in its place?
Oh, yes. I mean, okay. Other monitors work fine.
Oh, they do?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Pure LCD monitor mess up then.
Yeah, it seems to be something, some timing issue on the motherboard of this thing.
Well, the LCD monitors are kind of interesting because refresh rate means nothing to them. They're driven internally. They're given the data and they scan it approximately 60 hertz.
Right, there's a processor that just basically writes the pixels.
Right, but on the other hand, some of them get confused if you tell them something other than 60 hertz. They're supposed to be able to figure it out. So make sure somewhere on that monitor is a spec that says, I want to be driven at.
All right, so if I'm 1240. Not driving it at 60 hertz, I should look at the
yeah, that's
on
a good
my,
point.
My,
yeah.
It's not supposed to matter, but it does.
It does. I've seen that happen.
Okay, well, yeah. We'll try that again.
Yeah.
All right,
Bruce,
you guys are talking awfully fast today.
Well,
I get a lot of material in.
I'm typing awfully fast, too, hopefully, so. If you check out the website now, we've got it updated
and
live.
And you're going to the gym as well.
Oh,
I'm hoping to.
Verbal.
I'm going to
get to yoga here shortly,
okay.
too.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Let's take one final phone call, but I do want to remind folks that this is KVMR-FM Nevada City, and we want to thank our underwriter for this hour of programming, and they are Ohmsoft Technologies, providing local Internet solutions for home and office from Sacramento to Truckee, including DSL, dial-up access, domain name registration, secure transaction services, and technical support. 530-758-0119 or ohmsoft.com. Ohmsoft, the enlightened Internet solution. Hi, caller, you're live.
Yeah, hi. Kind of curious about a program a friend of mine recommended for moving audio formats around called Exact Audio Copy. Apparently a sound engineer from Germany came up with it because of his dissatisfaction with some other programs.
I've seen that, and it's been used here to extract audio from CDs. I believe, and it's called EAC as a short form. Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
And that uses the LAME encoder, and the results are actually quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Going to ask something about it.
Apparently the something to do with the acceptable error loss rate or something along those lines.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, they're real good. I'm not familiar with using it directly, but I've read a lot of discussions about it, and it's just a bit-by-bit check to make sure everything's the same.
Right.
Know?
That's my understanding. The reason it's so good at extracting audio is if you've got a regular audio deck and you put an audio CD in it, the deck can actually recover from a certain number of errors, but it can't easily recover in real time. If you're extracting the audio, it's got all the time in the world to go back and try to correct the errors, and it even tells you what the quality of your audio CD is. That was my understanding about why it was such a good product for pulling CDs.
Yeah, the error report is very detailed. In fact, almost a little too technical on this. The interface is a little clunky, too, but you know, I find for the simple things I know how to do, it really seems to make a clean recording. So.
Well, that's good. Yeah, it's good to hear. And it's called again?
Exact Audio Copy, EAC, and it's .de in Germany, I think.
Sounds about right. Germany is where all the propeller heads actually all originate from.
Yeah, Paul Patterson put that on a couple of machines there. I was impressed with it.
Yeah.
Basic, but extremely robust, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And just one final question. Purchasing printers and scanners, the strategy you personally would have, I kind of wonder if it's worth buying all-in-one that has a better scanner in it, or if it's maybe just better to buy a high-quality scanner separately for good photos and...
Just depends on your budget, man, you know, really.
Yeah. But
even the worst scanners are pretty darn good now, but if you're moving, crossing the boundary to pro, then all bets are off. But I've even got the least expensive HP printer, scanner, copier, fax machine, and I'm really happy with
Glenn
that.
Turned me on to the Canon all-in-one, the MP500, which has now been updated, and I love this thing. It's... The ink's a little proprietary because it was kind of new, but I've finally gotten some good sources for that, and it just works fabulous. It prints faster than anything I've ever seen. I mean, it's just like done. You know, the whole page is done. It scans great. Works on Mac and PC both. It was like $130, $100 now.
Yeah, it was very inexpensive. Again, the consumables are what are going to cost you a lot of money. What I would say is make sure whichever printer you get, and again, in my humble opinion, make sure you have individual colors cartridges, not a combined three-color cartridge.
You bet.
And we'll let the ink run out, but be prepared when it's run out to replace it right away. You don't want that ink well to go dry. But most printers will tell you that the ink is gone when you still have a certain quantity left. So,
oh, good, good.
That's just part of their marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. An all-in-one, if the printer breaks, are you going to keep it and still use the scanner? Or if the scanner breaks, will you keep it and still use the printer? So, again, you know, do you want it all-in-one? Do you want to buy a TV-DVD combination, or do you want to buy a DVD player and a TV separately?
I had all the individual bits myself, and it was just so much stuff, you know. And then I finally, when I got this all-in-one, so far it's a year later, and it's still working just great. So it just depends. The scanners are all great on just about any of them. I was about to do the individual bits, you know, as well. Like Glenn said, one goes down, you lose it all. But I don't know. It's so nice having a copy machine, a scanner, a fax, and a printer all there. And I have one connection, you know, sitting on my wireless. It's just great. I just send it to it, and it's done.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at it with it, too. And
well, the Canon's great. I would recommend Canon myself after trying Epson. I don't care for HP. Glenn, I don't think, cares for HP.
I like it.
Paul does, but then again, he's...
He would.
Yeah. Well, what are your reservations with the Epson? Because my brother prints a lot of T-shirts and finds that they're really durable under heavy use.
I was a total Epson fan for a long time. What's happened in the last couple of years, I can't tell you. I've gone through four or five Epson printers. Luckily, they've been under warranty. And I've just been reading reports, and I go, and that's the thing I would do, man. Get out on CNET and all these e-opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Go around and read the reviews of what people like you and me are saying, because that's what convinced me. I've just been reading too many negative comments about Epson lately. They just seem to have been dropping the ball in there, and a lot of lawsuits about their printer ink.
Right.
As far as
running out,
you know,
when
running
out
when it's half full, all kinds of nonsense. And I've always been an Epson guy. I've still got one Epson printer I use for doing my CDs, but I don't think I'll buy another Epson printer, to be honest, at this point.
And we do have to get going. Caller, what's your first name, and thank you for calling?
Matt,
thanks for calling
so much. Yeah, thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
We are at zen.kvmr.org. You can email us at zen@kvmr.org. This has been the ZenTech Radio Show here on KVMR FM, Nevada City. For the last hour, Jimmy Carter's coming up. He's in here ready to go with his music. This has been Glenn and Paul, and special guest, thank you so much,
Mikhail Graham.
Bye.
Bye.